Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Comedy Advice Podcast. My name is Stefan Sitani, and I'm your host. Joining me today, very special guest. She's starring alongside Idris Elba in the movie Concrete Cowboys on Netflix, despite her severe allergies to horses. Everybody, welcome Liz Priestley.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for joining. I was saving that little bit for the intro, but I was going to be
like, I was like, wow, look who's done his research. Oh my gosh.
I was going to mention it when you were talking about your cat
That's
allergies.
Awesome.
But you know what? It's good.
I know. The allergies. It's insane. But yeah, no, horses too.
You know, fun fact, my wife, she's from Brazil and she loved animals. They had dogs, they had cats, and her dad was a truck driver, and inside his gas tank, he heard a little thump, thump, thump. It was a little monkey. So they adopted it. They brought it into their home, and they had it until my wife found out she was allergic to it. They could never potty train it, and it would pee everywhere. So they ended up giving it away. But from what I heard, it was a little scoundrel. It was very cute because it would just hang in the drapes.
Yes!
It would like grab the tails of the cats and dogs and just ride them. So, I would have loved it.
That is amazing. I don't even care if I was allergic to monkeys. I would just keep it. I would be like, I'm putting it up. Like, give me the Flonase. Give me all of the Benadryl. Like, all of it. I am keeping this monkey because how awesome is that? Like,
dude, so cool. She gets that tail. She gets to say, I had a monkey. She also, by the way, you might need contacts for it though, because her mom wore glasses and this monkey did not like glasses. So she'd hop over, hop on the shoulder, grab the glasses off the face and throw them on the ground.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Babies do that too.
Babies do that to me too.
Don't normally wear glasses. I actually normally wear contacts. This is going with the weekend wear. I have been too lazy to put the contacts in. So I'm like, glasses. Seems like a glasses kind of day. Yeah. And this is just the result of my pure laziness. And but yes, babies will snatch your glasses as well, in my experience. It's like jewelry. They want to go for whatever's shiny and then they just kind of, they get their hands on it and they go, well, that's nice. And then they just throw it. They don't return it to you. Like they just go, And you're like, well, I can't see you or where they landed.
That's what I try to do with people as well. Cause I, you know, if I want them to not see my flaws and wrinkles, I'll grab the glasses. Like, no. You get to see me in blurred vision.
It's a very useful tactic. I will say it's annoying, but it's a useful tactic. No, it's funny, but yeah, babies love the shiny stuff, and you're just like, trying to move their head out of their hand reach. And just, hey, okay, you know. But
I feel like I might develop a defense mechanism when I have a child. Hey, how's it going?
Yes, you kind of move them up and what you get, you distract them with the woo up in the air for a minute. And then they kind of go, oh, right. This is fun. Shiny stuff is boring for like a minute.
Oh, man, that is amazing. And speaking of babies, you were once a baby and we're here to talk about the amazing Liz Priestley. Wasn't that a great transition? Beautiful transition. Maybe one of my worst.
You were once a baby? I'm like, I wasn't sure where that was going, but that was beautiful. I like it, actually.
Oh, man. And, you know, to put on our historic glasses to be able to see your life a little more clearly, wanted to talk about you because you've got an amazing life. You're an amazing actress, first off, and I want to dig into that. But before we do, let's excavate over on this side in your youth. You didn't start out as an actress. You started off as a musician and in music, which is amazing. How did the spark, that bug bite you to get into some music?
Well, you know, I have to say, I do think I started as an actor first. At least the passion was there first. Because
Okay.
Do you know how like you're in elementary school and they make you do class plays and they're really, you know, it's like you and your whole kindergarten class standing up there and singing like five nursery rhyme songs and that's it.
Yes.
to me, that was a serious performance. You know what I mean? Like in kindergarten, I was like, don't mess this up. Like we must be in line. Like, you know, it was serious. And then I remember like even as far back as like second grade, we were going to put on a class play and we had auditions for the parts. And I was like, I want this part. I want to play this part. And then I auditioned and I didn't get it. And I went home and cried my eyes out. And my mother was like, this is not a big deal. like this is not the thing to be upset about. But, you know, I remember even then being like, no, this is so serious because I, you know, as far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be the center of attention, which is so selfish, but it's the truth. And so, and then because of that, music sort of followed. And so even though I knew I wanted to be the center of attention, it was, you know, in any way that I could do that. So yeah, there were school plays, but then yeah, music came. And so I had older siblings, they all played instruments. And when I was four, my mom asked me, you know, do you want to do it too? And I was like, yeah, like they give concerts, people get to watch that. Like, yes, you know? Nice. So I started.
How many siblings did you have, by the way? Sorry to interrupt.
Oh no, you're fine. I have five sisters actually.
Oh yeah. Man, I've got two brothers and two sisters. So I'm just one sibling.
So you know the full house. Yeah. And you know, house full of women. It's a fun time, you know. it's a good time. No, it was cool because, you know, when I was a baby, I was adopted as an infant. So it was a really cool environment for me to be in also, not just being in a house full of women, which is wonderful, but you know, I had three older sisters who are Caucasian, and I have a younger sister who's Black and a younger sister who's biracial, and my parents are Caucasian. So, you know, it was a really cool environment to grow up in. Wow. Yeah, it was awesome. My parents really worked to, you know, with everything else that I was into, you know, music and acting and everything else, they really did try to also have me just embrace, you know, the African-American side of me. Like, my mom learned how to like cornrow hair, and she did all of our, you know, hair. Aww. Everybody's in the neighborhood. And, you know, like it was, I used to tell people, my sister and I were doing the Venus and Serena, the cornrows with the beads, well before you ever saw Venus and Serena. So like, I had that going on, that Stevie Wonder type hair thing going on for a few years. Yeah.
Amazing. Trendsetters.
Yes. It was awesome. It was really fun. And then, so yeah, into that, I started playing violin at four. I still play. I don't take lessons, of course, but I still play. I've had to bust it out at some auditions and things. So yeah, I still play. It's just hilarious.
Now, did your older siblings, did they also play violin, or were they different?
One of them did. So they all played cello, violin, and viola respectively. And then I began violin, and my younger sister began cello, and then the youngest played trumpet. But we also all played different instruments too. Like my sister who played the cello also played piano, and so did the violinist. The violinist also took voice lessons. And when I was a teenager and was like, I don't want to take violin lessons anymore. And my parents were like, you have real musical talent, so you should keep doing that. Mm-hmm. It was because of her that I chose singing, because I was like, well, she did that, I'll do that too, you know. Kind of play different things. I play piano as well. I can play all the string instruments now because of them, you know, because we got to kind of learn all of ours. And then, you know, the cool thing too was that my mom would come to every single lesson for each of us and learn and bring her own instrument. So whether it was a cello, a viola, or a violin, and learn how to play it with us so that at home she could practice with us. So my mom was taking lessons too. So yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. It was, you know, I played in orchestras. We played in group class. I got to do a concert with, you know, several concerts actually with the Philadelphia Orchestra. their members gave lessons and I used to take lessons from them. So it was really cool. It was really cool.
I really hope there was some sort of priestly soundtrack or something. Like, when it's like dinner's ready.
You know, there probably should have been at some point. We used to play weddings. My siblings and I used to play weddings. We were like a little chamber group. And, you know, I'm sure someone has this on video somewhere playing.
Amazing.
The only one of us that I think has an album truly is my dad, who is also a vocalist. And in his, you know, later years, he's been really into like the karaoke type stuff. So he's got like a whole studio at home with like the mic and like the tracks and all the things. And he finds these beautiful vocal tracks of old like jazz standards and contemporary beautiful like things, and he just records songs and he just sends them to me. I have about 700 of them. That is not even an exaggeration. I put a bunch of them on an album a few years ago, and there were 50 that I put on this album. That was probably like 6 or 7 years ago. So yeah, he's got a lot of songs out there. But he's a singer.
Wow.
Yeah, we used to joke, he and my mom's a piano player, we used to joke that my dad used to sing at a lot of weddings when I was growing up, and I used to, you know, run up to him, pull him on the pant, like, dad, can I sing with you? Dad, can I sing here? And he'd be like, get up, come on, I'm practicing, get away, come on. And then somewhere in high school, it flipped because I started singing at weddings, and he would come in and, Liz, let me sing with you on a duet on this one. Liz, come on, let me sing with you. And I'd be like, dad, go away, I'm practicing. Dad, come on, dad, I'm practicing, you know. We were all musicians at one point. And
I hope you guys fought singing too. Like, clean up the dishes, Liz. No, I will not. This sounds like such a cool family.
I probably did because I was the musical theater one. I was the musical theater nerd growing up. So yeah, I probably did a fair amount of that. My daughter, I have a 13-year-old daughter. She frequently points out to me now that when I say things, I'll say something and then I will say the exact same thing again a second later, but I will sing it. So I'll be like, can you go clean your room? Can you go clean your room? Just be like, Mom. I'd be like, all right, I'm going downstairs. Just be like, why?
That's amazing.
So I'm pretty certain at some point I was probably like, I'm gonna slap your face. Like,
get out of my room.
Oh. Like, didn't I tell you once? Oh my goodness.
Amazing. So I was going to say too, you just talked about musical theater. So you ended up, I'll let you tell it, but I know that you went to the College of Ithaca for musical theater.
At that point. So I knew I wanted to be an actor from like when I was 7. There was something about like the process of movie making that I just was like, that is amazing. Like, that was around the age I found out you can make a living playing pretend and get paid for it. And you can pretend to be different people throughout history. I was like, yes, that's the job for me. Where do I, how do that? You know, and then I started doing, like as many plays as I could in high school and in the community and everything. But I knew that's what I wanted to do. Nice. But you know, separate from that, my parents were like, hey, music. And I was like, you know, so college came and I thought, let's compromise and I will go for musical theater because I thought I'll get the most well-rounded training. Maybe I can use music to get my foot in the door to the acting. That was always the plan. And so, yeah, so I went to Ithaca. I loved it there. The program was super, super intense. But I made it through because they can cut you. Excuse me. During the first 2 years, they can cut you at any time. Yeah. If they don't think that you're up to snuff. So
I would be so nervous for the first two years. That's crazy. Oh my gosh.
It was, insane. And the whole first 2 years, they give you like a status, and they basically kept me on probationary status for the entire years, which is like a step away from, okay, we're kicking you out, you know? And the, my final review session, I sat with my advisor and he's like, you know, congratulations, we're, you know, it's like, why did you keep me on probation this whole time? And he's like, because we realized early on that you are the kind of actor that if we said you're great, you would just stop working. So we needed to push you. And I was like, you're absolutely right. That is absolutely right. Because as soon as they said, oh, you're great, I would have been like, I'm great. I don't need to do anything. Like, I wouldn't have done anything. They were absolutely right. They kept me scared for 2 years. I was on edge. I was calling my parents like every weekend, can I please come home? And they were like, absolutely not. Like, you need to stay. And I'm so glad that I did. But yeah, the training was great. And I was there, and then I graduated, and I moved with most of my class to New York City, and I started being an actor. That was the beginning of all of it. Excuse me.
How amazingly frightening.
It's dust from unpacking. That's another fun allergy. You know what else is a fun allergy? Fresh cut grass. The summertime is horrifying for me.
Oh, that no.
Leaves that have fallen. So the fall is another fun time for me. Yeah, there's like a chemical that fallen leaves apparently give off. I know I'm going off on a tangent, but
no, it's okay. I don't actually understand those things because I live in the desert. So we've got like cacti, scorpions. If you talk about scorpions, like, you know.
Wow, scorpions, you have to deal with scorpions
all day. I have to check my slippers for scorpion. Oh, wait.
Are you serious? There
was, yep. Hold on one sec. Die.
Okay, oh my God.
I'm just kidding.
Okay, wait. That is crazy to me because, you know, the dream of mine, of course, has always been to live on the West Coast. But scorpions they're not something I'm prepared to deal with yet. Like, what?
I've lived in Arizona. I lived on the East Coast in Jersey, and I worked in the city for 8 years. But other than that, I was in Arizona. I think I've seen maybe 1-2 scorpions in my entire life.
That's still too many.
So, I know. Yeah, they're mean. They're mean little dudes.
Yeah. But
they're so tiny. It's almost like they're toys. And then you can just stomp on them. But they're so menacing because they've got if you see a spider, the spider's like, hey, dude. But the scorpion, because it's got its legs on the ground, but then the scorpion's immediate just like, yo, how much you lift, bro?
Oh.
Yeah, it's bad. It's got its stinger just ready for you.
Yeah. It wouldn't matter how small it is. If I saw one, it would be, and I'm so ashamed of this, I would immediately call for my boyfriend and be like, you need to come over here immediately and dispose of this thing. I will not go near it. Like, I will trap it under a box until you get here.
It's terrifying. But you know what? The bright side is that you won't see them during the day because they just crawl out at night when you can't see. So you don't even have to worry about them. Yeah, exactly.
That's worse.
If you put on a black light, though, they all glow in the dark. So it's really cool. Yeah. So anyway, so we were talking about allergies and Arizona's a beautiful place to live. Lovely.
Okay. Anyway, my aunt and uncle live out there, so yes, I hear that. But okay, if you say so.
Don't worry. Scorpions are nothing compared to the deadly rattlesnakes that we've got out here. So it's the least of your worries.
I don't think I'll be living in Arizona, is what I'm thinking. Maybe Arizona is a fun place to visit. I will visit. I will visit temporarily and not put my feet on the ground.
Yes. Exactly. Just have one of those hoverboards or bicycles.
Yes.
Make sure magic carpet.
No, I would kill myself on a hoverboard. I don't know how people are not just like falling off them constantly. Like, I don't, the mechanics of a hoverboard, I don't understand it. So I would have to just have someone carry me, which is worse.
Hey, you know what? If the boyfriend, just have him carry you, piggyback.
Listen,
all the time.
That's how it's going to have to be because you have talked me out of walking in Arizona.
Whew. Just never take off your shoes and you'll be fine. You'll be great.
Steel-toed things. Yeah. what were we talking about? I'm so sorry.
we were talking about you just finished graduating from the College of Ithaca. You went to New York to become an actor.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was lucky that I got to be a working actor in New York because not a lot of people get to say that. I didn't quite make it to Broadway, but I got called in several times for a couple Broadway auditions. That was cool. I remember I got called in for The Color Purple on Broadway, and I was sitting in the waiting room waiting for them to call me, and word had just come out that the show was closing as I was sitting in the room, and I was like, so yeah, that was fun. But yeah, I had a couple Broadway auditions. That was really fun. And then I worked at some other theaters, I would say off Broadway. Sure. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was cool. I didn't have any other separate jobs. I was just acting. And then I got a national tour, and I got to tour the country for 6 months, which was so cool. And it was a musical. So, you know, singing and dancing and, you know, doing the whole thing. It was awesome. Traveling was cool. I think all actors should have to do tour life for at least 6 months.
That is so cool. So did you end
it
up?
Yeah, really.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Oh no, I'm just saying it really teaches you the appreciation, not just of being the actor, where you have those days where you really you're like, I don't feel like getting out of this bed and putting on a show. You know what I mean? But you gotta pull yourself up by the bootstraps and find that energy and deliver a great show because people paid that money. But it's great. It was a kid's show. So I love children's theater. I think all actors should have to do a bit of children's theater. Touring life is really fun. And we were the kind of tour where we had to put up our own set and take it down. My boyfriend is also an actor, and he did a tour. He actually played Big Bird on Sesame Street Live.
No.
And there, yes, yes. He's on YouTube. You can see clips of him on YouTube. It's really funny. He's really tall. So his tour, you know, was like a massive tour where you have like a crew that puts up your set, and you have a lighting crew and a sound crew, and you've got like a whole, you know, and they flew to every city. My tour was, we had three, you know, Dodge Sprinter vans, one of which held our entire set. And we drove from city to city, and we had, you know, you had like a track as a performer, like you played these three parts. And I also knew I was in charge of this part of the set that I had to put up and take down at a certain part of the show. And, you know, it was very organized. It was really cool. I think all actors should have to do it. And then, you know, I was seeing places like Flint, Michigan. I was in Chicago. They were in the Super Bowl that year. So this would have been, what, 2006, 2007, something like that. I don't know. I'm not great on years. But they were in the Super Bowl that year because the hotel we were in, they were like, after the show, when you come back to the hotel, you are not allowed to leave the hotel. And I was like, why? And they were like, Super Bowl, there may be rioting in the streets. So I'm like, what? And sure enough, I was in the hotel. You could hear them outside just, oh, and I think they won. I think they won. Yeah. So, but you could hear them, you know, and they were like, do not leave the hotel, you know. It was awesome. It was awesome. It was a fun trip. It was really cool.
Oh, my God.
And then after that, I moved back home to Philly, and I had my kid. And I've kind of been here ever since.
I love Philly. I've only been there once or twice, but the last time we went, my wife and I, we got word that I got a job here in Phoenix, so we were going to move from
New Jersey. Oh, wow, yeah.
We ended up taking a little road trip.
That's where my aunt and uncle live, by the way, in Phoenix. So.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yes. Okay.
Hi, Uncle Knott. I call him Uncle Knott. His name is Uncle Art, but when I was little, I couldn't pronounce it. So, hi, Uncle Knott.
Oh, Uncle Knott. Uncle Knott, Liz says hi. No, I'm just kidding. We don't live together. We're not that close. But no, we live. We lived in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Hour away from Philly.
Hey, great name.
Yeah. And we ended up going to Philadelphia, and it was a beautiful, it's just like a tiny little New York. It's so cute, historic. Yes. It was also St. Patrick's Day, so people were dressed up as leprechauns and super drunk. So that was fun.
Philly knows how to party for a St. Patrick's Day, I will say. Yes, yes.
Oh, yes. It was like 3 in the afternoon, and my wife and I were taking a picture by the love sign.
Oh, yeah, by the love sign. Yeah.
And then there were just like 5 guys also there that were just like, one was humping me in the picture and everything. And I was just like, all right, Philly experience. This is great.
We Philly, we like to have a good time, man. It's good stuff. You know, we get a lot of hate. We get a lot of hate because of our sports fans, I think. But we have a good time. We have a good time.
Oh,
I don't know why we threw snowballs at Santa. I don't claim that. I was not there. I don't even know if I was alive. I was alive. But, you know. The rest of it, we're pretty good, guys. We have a good time.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. I'm in and out of Jersey and New York a lot. So I'm familiar with Elizabeth, New Jersey. But, yeah, it's nice. It's a hop, skip, and a jump away from New York. So I am in New York a lot, which is why I've stayed in Philly, because my family's here. I'm a train ride away from New York, and also from, you know, DC and, you know, Baltimore, or, you know, wherever that I've found work. I've not really had to leave my home yet to do it. I said, the dream is one day to make it to the West Coast, and now's not really a good time to do that. So I guess I'm going to stay in Philly for a little longer, it seems like.
You know what? I love the West Coast. I love Arizona, but the East Coast will always have a nice, crowded, polluted place in my heart, because it's just so beautiful. It's
you know,
I like the people. I like the thing. There's so much to do.
Exactly,
it's just never a dull moment. And enjoy it.
And,
I know you
and
are.
And we have seasons. And we have seasons, which I'm personally over. But, you know, I'm glad we have them. I'm ready to move to a place where it's just mild all year. Ever since I was a kid, L.A. was always kind of like the dream. Like, someday I will go to LA, and I think I will at some point. But now that, you know, this movie is coming out, hopefully that will push things in that direction. But I'll tell you, when I shot this movie, it was pre-pandemic, so this has been really like a bummer in so many ways. And again, I don't want to complain, because I have my health, I have my home, and I have the ability to still audition and everything. But it has been such a bummer, because the joke was, when we were shooting the movie, hey, Liz, aren't you excited? Your parents are going to get to go in a theater and see your face up there. And I would joke back and say, oh my God, you guys, you know, knowing my luck, I'm probably going to end up on Netflix or something.
Oh no.
My movie's coming out on Netflix.
Lo and behold, here we come, Netflix. Oh. Well, hey, Netflix is not a bad place to
not
be.
Not at all.
Not
and you know, I when the pandemic did start, you know, kind of hit, and we knew that the movie industry would also be affected like everyone else's, that was the first thing I said was, oh my gosh, I hope we end up on Netflix. Because, you know, Idris Elba, who plays my husband in this movie. And just throwing that out there. I love bragging about that. He's a great working relationship with Netflix. A lot of his projects are on Netflix. So when that happened, that was the first thing I said. I was like, oh my God, we might be on Netflix. And I got immediately excited, because everyone's home. And everyone has Netflix. Everyone has Netflix. I was like, this is going to be awesome. So I'm happy.
I'm excited too. I've got Netflix. I'm here at home. I can watch you with my joggers and my sweatpants.
Joggers.
Or my shirt. So I'm so
like,
happy.
With a cocktail. This is going to be amazing. I'm trying to be like, I might organize like some Zoom parties so we can all watch it together. I'm just going to have like different people. I think I'll just do a week like a 5 day, 5 or 6 days where you can just sign up whatever night you want. And we'll
love
watch
that.
The movie together.
That's awesome.
I think so. The interesting thing about this pandemic is the technologies that have come out of this and allowed us to still keep in touch. Zoom is it is an amazing feature. Like, this is amazing. I have coffee dates with friends over Zoom that I can't see normally. So I said to them, like, hey, I'll meet you at 9 a.m. tomorrow on Zoom. And we get, and we'll sit there with our coffee and be like, so how's your day going?
Yeah.
It's a great thing.
We do that with my family. We all get together. I ended up buying the pro version so we get longer than 40 minutes. But now I think Zoom would make more money if they charged you to only have 40 minutes because parents to get the video and the audio set up and then my brothers to be able to pay attention. It's just a whole ordeal. So I'm like,
yeah. Oh, holidays. Forget it. With all of my family, and then we all have kids. So, you know, it's like 20 of us on there. And the whole time it's, you know, my mom and dad just in the background going, who's talking? Can you see me?
Exactly.
Can you see your father? Get in here. George, get in here. Can you see your father? Who's talking? And we're all just sitting there like,
I love it. I know. And then their face is so close to the camera. It's just their eyeball. And they're like, hello?
Why can't I see anything? It's a half a face. It's a quarter of the face. And they're just, can you see me? Yes. Back up a little.
so funny.
Or somebody's always on a delay. And you're just sitting there like,
I know.
Did you hear what I said? Oh, did you hear what I said, Mom? Did you hear what I said?
I remember
and
last
the whole time,
week.
Mom's going, what? What's it? How? Liz.
Oh my gosh. I know. Last week it was my mom's birthday and we were trying to get a Zoom call together to sing happy birthday to her. And then there was like 20 minutes in and I'm like, Mom, hit the video button. What are you doing? Ah! And then we're like, happy birthday.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like on Christmas, we said, we're going to get on at 4 o'clock for the Zoom call. And it's like, for the 3 hours prior, I'm getting text messages. Do we agree on a time? I thought we said 4. I thought it was 2. I'm not going to be ready by 4. Can we get on at 4? So is 4 o'clock not the time? No, it's still 4. Well, I can't get on at 4. Wait, didn't we say 2? How about I just turn my camera on and when you come into frame, you just, Liz! And I'll turn the camera around.
Oh, God. Exactly. Yes. That's the way. Oh, Zoom drama. It's you thought there wasn't enough drama in the world. Now it's Zoom drama.
That's Zoom drama. I'll take it over all the other drama. I'll take the Zoom drama.
Yes.
You know.
Same. But it's
because at the end of the day, you could always just hit, you know what, guys? I gotta go. I love you. Leave.
Bye. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, God. But it's so interesting how things have worked. And I know I was hearing another podcast that you were on where you were saying that you even you did a lot of commercial work and you ended up flying to Uruguay for a commercial.
I've only done 3 commercials prior to this film. And then, is that it? Yeah. I think one more since then. So, okay. But yeah, it's for Safe Auto, and we were supposed to be doubling for New York, and because I remember the audition was in New York, and I went up there and I did this thing, excuse me, and it was so funny because normally you can kind of see who's up for the same part as you because they either, you know, same height, they kind of got the same hue or whatever. Uh-huh. So you can kind of be like, oh, okay. I remember I walked into that room and being like, nobody here looks like me and nobody looks like each other. So like, what is going on? You know what I mean?
Oh, wow.
And I did this audition. I played a cop. Uh-huh. And it's I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if they play it in Arizona, but you know, it's three construction workers putting up signs for Safe Auto, and they're kind of yelling at each other because one of them's real high up. And they basically
I have seen
say,
this commercial.
Yeah. Yep. And then the guy's like, oh, good. You don't have to drive illegally like you did today. And he's like, hey, shut up. That cop might hear you. And I walk in and I'm like, come on down here, son. You know? And I remember at the audition being like, I said it and the guy laughed. And I was just kind of like, I think I just got that part. You just get a feeling with certain ones. You know what I mean? I was like, I think I just got this. And I got a call back. And at the callback, they said, do you have a passport? I'm like, I do. And I had just gotten my passport because I lost out on a job that was supposed to shoot in Canada that was supposed to pay 10 grand. And my manager goes, so send me a copy of your passport. And I go, I don't have a passport. Is that? And she was like,
oh, no.
So I lost out on that. So I made sure to get one right after that. So I had just gotten it like 2 days before. And he's like, do you have a passport? I said, yeah. He said, good. It's really expensive to shoot in New York. So we're going to double for New York in South America. I was like, excuse me? So then like a couple days after that, I got the part. And they send me, you know, an itinerary, which is, I mean, that was the trippiest thing. Uh-huh. And they're like, you know, next Friday, we're going to send a car, town car, to your apartment to pick you up, take you to the airport. You're going to get on this flight. And we're shooting in Uruguay. And you're going to be there for 3 days, all expenses paid. Like, it was so crazy. And then, so I did a little bit of research before I went. And turns out Uruguay is known for their steak. Like, they have some of the best steaks in the world. I said, oh, okay. So when I went there, you know, we shot for the day. And then after we were going to go to dinner and I was like, we got to find a restaurant where they sell steak.
Nice.
I don't know what they're feeding their cows or whatever over there. We need to find out immediately because that steak, it was like you cut into it, uh-huh. put it in your mouth and it would melt. It was amazing. Amazing. And the wine. And then we had this fantastic, you know, we went through, it was me and the three other actors that were there. So we went through a couple bottles of wine. We each had steaks. We each had, you know, they have these amazing sides and everything. We get the bill and it was basically the equivalent of like $40.
Oh my God.
It was like, what? You know? What? Of course, there, it's dollars, but it's different. And so when you first get it says $800. And I was like, ah! And then you do the conversion. It's like, oh, an American, that's like $40.
Oh,
I was like, that's
nice.
Ridiculous. Ridiculous.
I wonder what they do. You know what? Our Americans, our cows are probably so stressed by the time it gets to your plate. The cow's probably been through three divorces. It's like, oh God. Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. They must be, you know, tender. I don't know, massaging these cows or something, but it was so good. It was so good. I want to go back just for that. But the people were lovely. Yeah. The people were lovely. I mean, and it was so funny because the day I arrived, it was 82 degrees. Mm-hmm. And I was standing there and we were waiting for the transport back to the hotel from the set. And I'm standing there, I'm just baking. I'm like, ugh. It was so hot. And the next day is 51 degrees and overcast and rainy.
Wow.
And all the commercial is me and three gentlemen, and all of the guys lost their voices by the end of the day from all the screaming in the cold weather.
Oh, geez.
But because of my opera background, I did not lose my voice. And so by the end of the day, I'm going, he said he needs a cup of tea. He said he wants, he needs two sugars and a lemon. You know what I mean? And, but yeah, we were all screaming. It was a miserable day to actually shoot, which was so disappointing because the day we got there was so amazingly lovely, but I loved it there. It was incredible. And I just couldn't believe you know, it was cheaper for them to fly in three actors who were from New York, me from Philadelphia, our director who was Finnish. The crew was Italian and the extras were Argentinian. So to fly all of us to Uruguay was somehow cheaper than us in New York. I was like, I don't know. I don't even know how that's possible, but sure.
That's amazing. And it looked like New York too. It did not look, when I saw the commercial, I was like, this does not look like Uruguay to me.
It was just a middle, you know, just a street in the middle of downtown. I forget the name of the city, but it was a beautiful city too. But yeah, I mean, it looked like, you know, somewhere down in like, I don't know, like the garment district or something. Like it looked like a corner in New York. And I was just like, this is crazy. This is nuts. But yeah.
That's amazing. That's really cool.
It was awesome.
And I was going to, right before we get into your movie, then we'll get into the advice. I wanted to also say you were almost a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe too.
Yes. I got cast in Jessica Jones. I was going to be on the episode season 3. I can't remember the episode number, but it was like Trish has gone away after the death of someone. I don't want to spoil for people who haven't watched it. I don't know, you're late, but you know, death of her mother, I'll say that. And she comes back, and there was a scene where she came back to the talk show and I was like the head of craft services on the top show. And it was awesome. I had a craft service table, it was all fake food and it looked real. And everyone would try to come over between takes and start trying to eat it. And they'd be like, oh, it's styrofoam. And I'd be like, yeah, put it down. You know what I mean? That happened several times. It was great. But I had a whole scene with Rachel Taylor and, you know, where she actually spoke to me. I spoke to her and everything. And we filmed it. I met her. I briefly met Kristen Ritter.
Wow.
And then they cut my scene for time. So I didn't end up being in it actually. But they were so sweet. They called me and they said, you know, we're so sorry we had to cut you. But you know, the great thing is you can still be a part of the MCU. I was like, okay. Cause now that Black Panther is a thing, I wanna be part of the Dora Milaje. Thank you very much. Shave my head. Yeah. I want to be on that. Oh my gosh. Like, where do I sign up for that?
Oh man. I mean, bittersweet. I would say sweeter that, you know what, as you continue to rise, here we come.
It's all good. My attitude is always, if you get cut from something or if you don't get cast in something, it's because something bigger and better is around the corner. So, and for me, that absolutely was true. It was a bummer because I told so many people about it. And then I had to tell all those people, oh, I'm not going to be in it. Sorry. Not going to be in it.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It is what it is. Exactly. Better things are coming. And speaking of better things, Concrete Cowboys. Amazing.
Concrete Cowboy. I
wanted to take just a little bit of time to talk about it. And I wanted to talk about the amazing approach you took in your audition to get the part. And I got little goose pimples when I heard the story. So I think that my audience would also get goose pimples. So we're just going to spread pimples everywhere. But
pimples! Spreading pimples everywhere. It's the pimple spreader. Yes.
It's better than Corona.
Yeah, you know, oh man, the preparation process is something I alternate between being proud of and also being embarrassed by, because I went so method on this, and I'm not someone who considers herself a method actress. And really, method kind of has a misnomer. We all kind of think of like Daniel Day-Lewis as method, as, you know, like if he's going to be in the Last of the Mohicans, he's going to learn how to carve out a canoe and sew moccasins and do the whole, you know what I mean? Like, we all think of that as method, and it is, but it's not always that intense. But for this, yes, because for the audition, the part that I play, so I play Cole's mother, who basically sets in motion the events of this movie, because he's acting up at school. We're from Detroit, and he's gotten kicked out of like his third school in a year, And I'm just like, I can't do anything more for you. You know, like I'm a single parent. I've done everything I can. I'm at the end of my rope. I'm taking you to your dad in Philly. And I basically dump him on his dad's doorstep, which is, you know, not great. But at the time for the audition, my character was written in a much different way than she ends up in the movie. And I'm very glad that they did away with a lot of these extra things. But nice. At the time she was written as a drug addict. The scene that I was going to audition for was I was being evicted from my apartment. It was like a scene with a cop where he's basically like, you got 10 minutes to go in there and grab your stuff and let's go, you know, and I'm, you know, pleading with him type of thing. I think I was going to rehab. I think that was in there too. Oh, so okay. She was really written as a very down and out. In the script, it said his mother looks like she's lived a hard life. And I was like, I immediately pounced on that because, and again, at my first audition, I didn't know how big this movie was. They didn't tell me anything about Idris Elba and I hadn't heard anything about him at that point. So I'm just thinking this is just a local movie that's, you know, filming. But I had seen the casting director several times and I really wanted to show her that I could play something serious because she kept calling me in for these, I call them Walmart moms. You know, those commercials where it's like, who's ready for school? I'm like, I wanna do something meaty here, you know? Yes, so my focus was like, I just want the director, the casting person to see that, oh, we can call Liz in for drama, you know? So I called my agent or my manager and I said, you know, is it all right if I do a little? And she's like, yeah, go for it. So I did, I got the notice that my audition was gonna be on a Monday. On a Friday, right? So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday into Monday, I stayed up for 72 hours straight. I was like, she's exhausted. She's at the end of her rope. She's crying. She's, you know, I need to show them that I am exhausted at the end of my rope. So I stayed up for 3 days straight, which I would not recommend to anyone.
Oh my God. I don't know how you did. I can't stay awake for 12 hours.
It was so much coffee because also caffeine makes you jittery. So I had so much coffee, like so much coffee, which then like made my nerves, you know, super. And so, and then I would run the scene over and over and over and over again. And I would cry and I would journal. I did other things that I'm not going to say, but but by the time, and I was happy because my audition was like 10 a.m. Monday morning. And I was like, good, because I can't, if it's like Monday afternoon, I'm not going to make it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And the way down to the audition, I'm like smoking cigarettes. I'm not a smoker in life, but for this, I did.
Wow.
But I'm smoking cigarettes, like chain smoking in the car. It's the only time I've ever smoked. And so I was real jittery, had so much coffee. I had made these recordings of what I had journaled and I was playing the audio in the car and I was crying. So by the time I got to the audition, I was just a wreck. And I had also used some makeup to really emphasize like the circles under my eyes. I put like real dark makeup on under the circles and I had like a scarf on my head. I didn't even do my hair, which girls, black women, you know, if we don't do our hair, like my hair was not done. And I had like holes in my clothes. I mean, I looked trashy. I've never looked like that at an audition. And I walk in and I'm like that Viola Davis, like snot crying. Yeah. And I'm sitting there and I'm crying and they call me in and I'm still crying and I do my scene and I cry through the whole thing. And, you know, and then I left and immediately got in my car and stopped crying. And then like went to the store and just like bought so much water. I was like, and went to bed. And then I got a call back and it was so funny because they called me back on a Friday and they said, you know, your callback is on Monday. So I did the same thing. Because that at that point I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do what I did because they obviously liked it.
They're like, it worked. Yeah.
So I stayed up another weekend straight and did the whole thing again, and went back in a second time and did it and left. And at that point, I did know about Idris, because once I got the call back, I was like, let me do a little digging. And I found out, you know, oh my goodness, cowboy movie shot in Philadelphia, Idris Elba. And I'm like, well, he's obviously not playing my 15-year-old son. I think he's playing the dad. Like, I think this is the mother of, you know, of the kid. And I immediately wrote myself out of the role. I thought, there's no way that they're going to cast someone who has no film credits in this role to be opposite Idris Elba. And at that point, he had been announced and Caleb McLaughlin had been announced. So I thought, there's no way that someone who's never been in a movie is going to be Idris Elba's wife or Caleb McLaughlin's mother. So I thought maybe the best I could do is get cast as a stand-in for like Kerry Washington or something, which I would have done gladly. I just wanted them to see that. And again, I wasn't even focused out on that. I was like, I just want the casting director to see that I can do more.
Right.
And then maybe she'll be like, Liz could be a stand-in. That'll be good experience for her. Mm-hmm. But I thought, I'm not going to get this part. There's no way. So I go in, I do this, the whole thing again, I leave. And then they call me back a third time. And at that point I was like, well, hang on. Am I really up for this? Like, am I really in the running for this? Like, don't tease me. Am I really? And they were like, yeah. And at that point it was sort of told to me that the director really, really liked me. He was coming out to Philly to meet with everyone and he wanted to meet me. There was a little pushback from producers who were like, we should get a name because this was still going to theaters. And they thought, you know, a name will guarantee butts in seats. We should get a name. And he was like, I'm very impressed with what she did. I'm going to go meet her. And if she does it again, I'm going to cast her. That's how it was put to me. And I was like, wow. So I went in a third time. And the third time was so funny because I got there. I did the same thing a third time. Same thing. So, and at this point, they had taken out the scene where I was being evicted. And they took out another scene that made a reference to the drug stuff. So I called my manager and I go, well, am I not doing it well enough? Or should I change what I'm doing? She said, go in there and do what you've been doing. Worry about that later. So, okay. So I went in and they were like, oh, just hang on 5 minutes. The director's on a phone call. We'll get you in 5 minutes. I said, okay. And I'm sobbing, by the way. I said, yeah, no problem. 45 minutes later, he comes out and I'm in a ball in the corner of the room. Just like, I've run out of tears at this point, and I'm just kind of like dry crying. Which I've never experienced. I'm crying, but nothing's coming out of my eyes. Like,
oh, and, my God.
I just remember his face. Like, when he came out, he was like, oh, my God, is she okay? You know, and he has me come in the room and I go in. I do the thing again. And he shook my hand after it. And it was the first time I smiled. And he was like, oh, my God, she smiles. And I was like, you know, and then I left. And then like the next day they called me and told me that I got the part. So, yeah,
that is.
I forgot to say, too, the other preparation. I always forget to mention this because I need to find this girl. I need to find her email. But there was a girl because, again, my character's from Detroit and I'm actually from the Philly suburbs, if you couldn't tell from how I sound. So the dialogue was written in such a way that I was like, I'm going to need to change up my way of speaking just a bit. And I watched this girl on YouTube, Bondi Blue. I think her name is Brittany, who reviews episodes of Love and Hip Hop. And I watched her review 16 hours of Love and Hip Hop Hollywood and just listened to her voice. That's her voice that you hear in the movie. That my speech patterns are based on her voice. So yeah, I keep forgetting that I did that as well. I had to make sure I could really say it. She has a very fast way of talking and I loved it. And I heard it and I was like, that's Amale. We haven't decided how my character's name is pronounced because no one actually says it in the movie, but I decided that was her. I was like, that's what she sounds like. So that's, yeah, I got to email her so I can be like, thank you.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh. Oh, I wonder if someone's trying, if they're trying to play an Arizonan part, if they're getting my voice just listening to this podcast over and over, and they're like, scorpion, cactus, rattlesnake.
She had and she's actually from I think New Orleans, but she has this wonderful way of speaking that I was like, that's her. I need to do that. And I mean, now I'm into Love and Hip Hop Hollywood. I've never seen an episode, but I care about it. I care about what happens with Ray J and everybody, because I was listening. I was listening to her break it down. I mean, she would take extensive notes and she would sit there and be like, oh my God, y'all. Okay, let me tell you about what Ray J did now, because, you know, I was watching this and I was just like, Ray J. And I was just like, she's amazing.
Oh my God. That. Well done. Well done. Thank you. My God. I cannot wait to see this movie, by the way. Did they have a date for when it's coming out on Netflix, by the way?
No, they don't. I don't have a date. They were like, early 2021 for the longest time. And then just the other day on Facebook, I saw someone messaged the director about a date and he just replied, spring. So I don't have a date yet. All I know is it's coming out in the spring, but it's torture, man. I thought it was going to be coming out in January. And so last month I was like, and then it didn't. So it needs to come out. I'm ready.
Oh, yes. Almost sounds like my mom when she was pregnant. It needs to come out.
It needs to come out.
Oh man, but I'm super excited. I saw the trailer or at least a snippet of
it. It's a clip. Hasn't been an official trailer. Really, the pandemic really messed a lot of this up. A lot of the process up. I mean, it really hit right when all of that would have been coming together, when a trailer would have been coming out. We were going to do a premiere where we all were riding down the red carpet on horses. Like, it was a whole thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Man. So I don't know whatever happened with the official trailer, what they're planning to do. But that clip is hysterical, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It is. Yes. And it's for, I'll have a link in the show notes, too, for people that want to see. But it's, I forgot the young child actor's name from Stranger Things.
Caleb McLaughlin.
He goes in Idris Elba's house, and then he turns and sees a horse, and I see it. I was like, that's the ugliest roommate I've ever seen. And he's like,
it's
what's
so
this?
Funny.
It's a horse. And I did some research on it, and I guess urban cowboys was a real thing.
Yes. I was going to say that story is a real story that happened to somebody that knew the writer director and was like, put that in the story. But yeah, that's why I'm excited really for people to see the film, much more than people seeing what I do and what Caleb does. Cause I'm making my film debut. Caleb is making his film debut. Our director, this is his first feature film. So it was really exciting for the three of us, but I'm really excited for people to do a deep dive when they see this, because they're going to realize these are real people. This is a real community. We shot at Fletcher Street Stables in Philadelphia. It's a real Black cowboy community, and they have been around since the Civil War. They've been around forever. And not just in Philly. They're basically in major cities all throughout the US, and they've been here forever. It's just that we've been, you know, Hollywood whitewashed out of the conversation of cowboy history. And so this is a movie that really kind of reclaims that and lets people see this community, we have real cowboys playing cowboys in our movie who are playing extras. One of the main cowboys is one of the Fletcher Street cowboys. He's never been in a movie before, and he was so good. And they were like, give him a main part. He's awesome. Yeah, so that's it's all amazing. Historical based. It's like I can't wait for people to be like, oh my God, this is in my backyard. Like, I recognize that building. Holy shit, this is real. You know, I'm so excited for people to see that because, yeah, they've been here forever and they so need our help because they are losing money like you wouldn't believe. But that's why that scene is there, because these cowboys, they really do care about these animals. And at times they've had stables close and they have nowhere to bring these horses except into their own homes. And so that's what you see in the movie. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow. Is there, by the way, with these real cowboys, is there any cowboy vernacular that they use? Like rootin' tootin', yeehaw, howdy?
Oh man, you know, I didn't hear a lot of rootin' tootin'. That's a great question. The vernacular. I don't know. And unfortunately, my part, because I'm the one who kind of gets my kid into that world, I missed some of it. I kind of show up again at the end and I get some of it at the end. Uh-huh. I don't want to give too much away, but, you know, I get some of that at the end. But when we were shooting, I didn't get to hear a ton of it. So if there was, I didn't hear it. But, you know, Idris and Caleb and Method Man and Jarrell Jerome and also Lorraine Toussaint, they were all, you know, between takes, just sitting with the cowboys around a campfire, talking, freestyle rapping. Like, it was, they would know. And I was just standing there like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, it was just like, oh my God, you know? We had a week of night shoots. Poor Caleb had to be there every night. I don't know how he did it, from like 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. basically. And I was there for two of those nights, and yeah, both nights between takes, they had a huge campfire going and they would just sit there shooting the breeze with these cowboys. It was the coolest thing. And it meant so much to, I know it meant so much to them. It meant so much to us as seeing these big stars here in our city, just hanging out, having a good time. It was awesome.
That is so darn cool to be able to make a movie, to be able to star alongside all of those folks and make your big screen debut there, and well, Netflix debut. And that's so cool. And then also to be able to pay homage to these urban cowboys that I didn't even know exist. And a lot of people probably didn't even know existed.
I didn't know they existed. And I live here. And they were like, you've seen the cowboys riding down the street. I was like, what are you talking about? And I, at my costume fitting, I said to the costume person, I was like, so this is a fantasy story, right? And she was like, no. And that's when I did my deep dive. And I was like, I've lived here my entire life. And I had no idea. None. Wow. And I was far from the only one.
Can you imagine? I was just like, can you imagine the next Uber ride you call pulls up, clink, clack, 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 clack. Just a little horse with the lift sign on.
That's how the movie got made, because Ricky Staub, the director, he was here. He lived in Philly for a bit, and he was in a cab, and a cowboy rode by the cab, and he was like, "What the? I'm getting out here. I'm gonna follow them." Followed the guy, and was like, "Please tell me your story," and wrote it down.
Oh, I thought his Uber was the horse, the cowboy.
No, he was in a cab and he rode by and was like,
dang,
what? And was like, got out and followed the guy. I was like, amazing. That's why I would want to work with him, because anybody who got out and was like, I got to write down this story and I have to turn it into a film. I'm like, yes,
that's incredible. Oh, well, Liz, we're going to just dive into, we're going to finish it off with some advice, but this was such an honor to have you tell your story.
I'm just
rooting, tooting and happy. Yeehaw.
Thank you. Yes. Yeehaw. I'm so excited and I really appreciate it. This has been really, really fun.
this has been great. Now we're going to dive into the advice just a little bit. Before we get into it, we've got inspirational quotes. I like inspirational quotes to help center me. maintain focus, and inspire me so that I can go on and do bigger and better things. I like to ask my guests if they have any inspirational quotes that help them through their dark days.
There's, you know, I'm not like a huge quote person, but there was one. I'm going to see if I can find it. Because it was my senior quote in high school. And I thought it was so good, but I need to think about what it.
You're all good. We'll cut this part out in post too.
So yeah. Like, I'm
you know
like,
what I just
oh,
came
man.
Up with? It's okay. I am asking you on the spot too. So
No
preparation.
It's, oh well. Man, it was such a great, I'm going to paraphrase it while I'm looking for it, but it basically was like, you know, if you want to get anywhere in life, you have to realize like talent is not enough. It's, you have to also have the hard work. You have to also have the determination. You also have to have the drive. And only with those things will talent then carry you to success. But I'm horribly paraphrasing that phrase, but I can't find it.
You know what?
I will find
it. I'm inspired. I'm inspired. That's a beautiful quote. It's a beautiful paraphrase.
Yeah, it's a great quote. I want to say it was like Thomas Edison or maybe Thomas Jefferson or something, but it basically, yeah, it was basically like success is a multi-step thing. And, you know, it's not just about talent. It's not just about hard work. It's not just about luck. It's about all these things together, and only together will they propel you to success. But it's just I like the quote because, especially when it comes to acting, I think a lot of, because I teach acting as well. So I teach young actors, and I think a lot of young actors, especially, really coast on their talent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like when I went to college, it was like, we're all talented. We all had to audition to get here. You're all talented. Talent is not enough to carry you to success. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to, you know, in some cases, you're going to have to be in the right place at the right time. You're going to have to go through all the experiences and all of that stuff. And only through that will you get to the success that you're seeking.
Nice. Yeah. So you put them all on probation and say,
yeah. I mean, you know, it makes you work hard. I think it's great. I think it's a great strategy. It worked.
Same with me. That's what I need to be able to get that. If I'm say, hey, Stefan, you're the greatest podcaster in the world, I'd just be sitting back, not preparing, doing any research. But Stefan, yes. You're on probation. We're almost going to kick you off Spotify because you suck so bad. I got to put in that work. Got to stay on Spotify. But
exactly. You can't just coast. You got to work. You got to work.
Yes. Exactly. So that's a beautiful quote. I'm going to make you feel better with a really bad quote that I have. It's actually not by any person whatsoever. It's by a robot.
Okay.
There are robots out there that are making quotes. And this specific robot, it's called Inspirobot. And so what it does is it uses AI to take some of the wisest words known to man or woman and just mashes them together for a beautiful quote.
I like that.
So... We'll try and figure out. I thought I spoke Inspirobot fluently, but we'll try and figure out if this means anything to us.
Okay.
It usually comes with a beautiful picture too. If you go to inspirobot.me, you just click and it generates a quote for you. But
okay.
This week Inspirobot says, "Eat dolphins and keep being a sweetheart." All right, so let's break it down. Eat dolphins. I don't know.
Eat dolphins. I feel like that's a metaphor.
God, I hope so.
That's a metaphor. I think metaphorically eat dolphins. What that means is consume the vibrant energy of such a beautiful, exuberant animal, and take that energy into the second half of the quote, which was what?
Keep being a sweetheart.
Oh, because dolphins are very sweet, sweet-tempered, sweet-natured. So I think it's a metaphor being like, consume that energy as the dolphin would, because they have a vibrant, friendly energy, and use that to keep being friendly to all.
Liz, I love the positivity that emanates from you and your soul, because I was thinking that Inspirabot was saying dolphins are a-holes. Dolphins are jerks. They don't laugh like, ha, ha, ha. They laugh like, you suck. So I thought they don't have any predators. There are so many. They're so smart. I think they might be smarter than humans. So if we eat them, maybe we will become intelligent like them, and maybe we'll keep them under control and be like, you know what? You better watch out, because we'll eat you. So that's where I went. So we went kind of different ways, but I like yours better. So let's stick with that. Dolphins is a metaphor.
That's really dark, Seven.
I've been in my house for a long time. Oh. I'm not a fan of dolphins,
you?
Apparently.
Who hurt you, Stefan?
It was
you?
A dolphin at SeaWorld, okay? John Ray the Dolphin. He was a jerk.
Oh,
Shamu
man.
Was amazing.
That's awesome.
He splashed me. And then
I like that.
Yeah, he splashed me and I was like, so I didn't like it. Everybody laughed at me. Still thinking about it, so I was like, I'm gonna put you on my plate one of these days, buddy.
Oh no.
And so that really
put you on one of my plate. I feel like the dolphins even taste good though. Like, do we eat dolphins? I feel like no.
I don't think we do. And I don't know who decided, like, who was like, you know what, this is okay to eat. Cats, no. Cows, yes.
Because
cats and dogs, you're gonna get a name to. Dolphins, no.
It's true. I don't understand the distinction. I just assume that cats taste bad. But I don't know why I assume that. I don't know. I feel like dolphins probably don't taste bad, but I could never eat one. I would just feel, I'd be like, it's Flipper. But I have no problem eating other meat. Like, I'm fine with it. I don't know.
I think it's because there's a name associated to it.
Yeah.
Once you got Flipper, that's how it
Flipper.
Works.
But I eat bacon, and I will jokingly say to my daughter, like, here goes babe. Like, I mean, I'm mean with it sometimes. I don't know. I feel like it's worse with a dolphin. That's very hypocritical, and I'm very sorry.
That's, you know what? There are no dolphins that listen to this podcast. So
I know.
Or pigs.
Okay, so. All the dolphin lovers. No, I'm not going to eat one. So
I would try it. I don't have any emotional connection to dolphins, and I think they are jerks. So
they are jerks.
They splashed me and laughed at it.
They rescue humans, though. I've read this.
Oh,
they like rescue humans from like aggressive whales and sharks and things like that. So
okay.
I do feel like I feel like I like them because of that, and also because they're apparently very smart. So I don't know, but
fair.
I don't know. I guess maybe I would if I don't know. If I was like on an island and starving, and you know, maybe.
And a dolphin just flopped onto the beach.
I mean, like, if I,
come here!
You know, if it was
mine.
Dead and I was like, I'm hungry, there's blubber or something. I don't know. Oh, God.
Oh, my
okay.
God. If I was starving on the beach in an island, I would eat my wife practically. Like, not kill her, but just the finger. Like. Love you, babe.
Nobody's safe. Run.
When my tummy starts to grumble, nothing is safe.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all fair game.
Oh, man. All right. I'm never getting on a boat with you because if we get somewhere, everybody listening, if I'm ever on a boat with Stefan and I don't make it back, y'all know what happened.
Don't worry. You'd be the last thing.
He ate me.
I'd make sure to eat the dolphins first. So that's definitely, we're not on good ground, dolphins and I.
Thank you.
But
I appreciate that.
I absolutely. And you know what? Now I feel nice and inspired. So I feel like we're ready to go into these questions.
Yes.
So we'll just
plow
through. All right. So we've got this first one. It says, it was found on Reddit, and it says, "Stepmom is an amazing prankster. Payback? Whenever my partner's dad and stepmom come for a visit, we always find random stuff all over the house. She hid a heap of unicorn rubber ducks all over the place. We were finding them a week later. Then her next visit, she had hid an inflatable unicorn ring toss head in the yard. Then the next visit, managed to sneak a fake potted plant in. It's a watermelon pot. We visited them just a few days ago and reversing out the driveway, found a watermelon rubber duck on the back of the car. She seems to go in themes. I'm expecting something else watermelon themed coming next. I have a large box full of at least 100 Lion King Ooshies that I got from a Woolworth promotion. Aussies will understand. That I've already hidden 6 of them in her house in the last visit and then plan to hide more next week, but I don't know if it's big enough. Suggestions?
I don't know what that Lion King thing is, because if I knew, I would be like, here's where you need to put it. But God, I'm not like a prank. The only like prank I ever did because I heard it in a book and I thought it was funny was like, this guy knew his sister hated finding loose change in his house. So like he stayed with her, and then like before he left, he spread like $30 worth of change in nickels and pennies around her house. And I did that to my sister in like $5 of change in like pennies and nickels, and just took a jar and sprinkled them all over her house. She was very upset. I would do something like that.
Oh, I like that. I was gonna say, these pranks are way too fun.
Like, I know. You gotta be obnoxious about it. That's the thing. Somebody's... Or if you're not gonna do change, sprinkle something else around her house that would be really annoying. Like, I don't know, a powder that smells really bad, like garlic.
Oh, that's
really bad. That's
a good
mean.
Idea. Yeah, and be like, oh, yeah. Unicorn toots all over the place. Keep it on theme with the unicorn. And
that's
then
what I'm saying.
The foul stench can be guised as a prank. I love it. That's great.
Just all over the house.
On her sheets, just douse it with garlic.
Under the mattress so she can't identify where it is. Under like between like sofa cushions.
Put it
and
in
like
the vent.
Under chair cushions. Yeah, in the lighting fixtures. Just a sprinkle. You don't want to start a fire. Just a sprinkle. If she's like, if they're liquor drinkers, maybe just a sprinkle in the whiskey.
Oh, nothing better than garlic-infused whiskey. I love that. And she will never prank you again. She might not even talk to you again. That's beautiful.
Or you could do like the whole, you know, the movie Amelie, where she was like pranking the neighbor. She kind of, she kept taking his slippers and making them a size smaller and smaller. So like I would take some of her like jackets or shirts or whatever and buy her size smaller and smaller.
Oh, I like that.
Make her
I
think
like
she's
that.
Going nuts.
Oh my gosh. Oh, and then she'll go on a crazy diet. Oh,
we
my
took
gosh.
It to a whole different this level. Is... She's like, tell me where to leave the rubber ducks. And I'm like, garlic or whiskey, bitch. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, mess with her mind. Get in there.
Yeah. Like,
we should
make
never
her
do
go
pranks.
Nuts.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. I'm
beautiful.
So sorry, you guys.
InspireBot's
really
fault. All right, we've got our last question, and then it's end of podcast. It says, 18, and I have so much white hair. I have a lot of white hair for an 18-year-old. Not just a few strands, but a lot. My first white strand was when I was 4. Is there any way to naturally get rid of it?
Is this a man or a woman asking? Do we know?
Oh, good question. We
because
don't.
Honestly, if it was a woman, I'm going to answer from the woman's perspective because I'm not a guy, and you can handle the guy's perspective. But
yeah.
Listen, I found my first gray hair in the center of the back of my head when I was in high school because I used to wear my head shaved, like real short.
Nice.
So one grew and everyone saw it. They were like, "What?" You know. And then my mom plucked it out. But honestly, if it was a woman, I wouldn't change it at I would rock the hell out of some white hair. And I would like make my whole head white or silver, or I would put in some like extra extensions that were white. I would rock that so much, because here's the thing. We as a society, we keep doing this thing where we look at our elders and we look down on them. And then anyone that shows any sign of aging, whether it's wrinkles or gray or white hair, we're like, oh, you got to change that. And if this is a woman asking the question, I would say embrace that. There is nothing more gorgeous to me than a woman, especially if it's a young woman, embracing the natural gray and white. My sister, one of my older sisters who's Caucasian, she has blonde hair, but at the temples, ever since she was in high school, it's so bright, it's white. And I love it. When she puts her hair back in a French braid, oh, love it. It's like highlights. So I would say if it's a girl, don't change it. Rock it. Shave your head down so you could like highlight it or something, highlight that white, or like, I don't know, but show it off. I think it's awesome. Now, for a guy, I don't know, that might be different.
I would say change it as soon as possible, because you are going to get made fun of. No, I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Keep it. I feel, dude, if I had white hair, I would feel so badass.
Yo,
I got this, chestnut.
Yeah, it's rad. My best friend, I've known my two best friends since kindergarten. We met in kindergarten. So we're going on over 30 years. I'm not going to say how old I am. But one of my best friends, she's half Asian, and she has this gorgeous, long, dark hair. And she's always had hair like that. It's like down to her butt. I saw her recently. It is streaked all throughout with white and gray, and she's in her 30s. So it looks very striking, but I absolutely love it. She looks so punk and so cool, and she loves it too. She's like, I thought it would bother me, and now I'm just like, this is so cool. Like, I love it. I think she looks so awesome. So I would embrace it, man. Love your hair.
I totally agree. Just be great. If you're a guy, be grateful you have any hair at all.
My dad went bald at 20, so you know.
Same.
Yeah.
Same. My dad did too. And so I'm so grateful for these locks of
You have a
chestnut.
Nice head of hair. Yeah.
I am follically blessed, and I am thankful every day. Especially in the pandemic, I'm growing it out, and
yes.
I've got my little white patch. Right there.
One little patch. That's so
one
awesome.
One little patch, and I'm so proud. I'm so proud. I love it. So, bro.
It's cool. I say rock that out. Whatever gray. I don't have grays yet, which is kind of great. But it's also kind of like when they come, I plan not to do anything about them.
Yes.
It's going to be interesting in this industry because they always kind of have you tried to hide it? But I mean, you know, like this is the result of I didn't wash my hair today. This is not mine. This is a result of I haven't washed my hair today. And when I do that tomorrow, it'll be nice and short. But boy, you better believe when I get the grays, because my hair isn't really short close to my scalp. So when you get the grays, you'll see it. So I'll be like,
nice. Show them off. It's a sign of white hair is the best. So
yes, it's a distinctive, beautiful look at Judi Dench. I think she's one of the most gorgeous. Helen Mirren, like these are some of the most gorgeous women in the world, and they have completely white and gray hair. And I just am like,
exactly.
Hope I look that good.
Absolutely. That's what we all hope for. That we just look great in gray. That's how it is.
Yes.
But
so embrace it, whoever you are.
Exactly. Well, Liz, thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely.
Talking about yourself, giving advice. It was awesome. I wanted to ask, where can people find you? What have you got going on? What would you like to plug? Let it rip.
You can find me on Facebook under Liz Priestley. That's my only social media. I don't do the other ones because I'm so boring. But Facebook. And also, I guess IMDb, but really, you know, the pandemic slowed a lot of things down. So I'm auditioning my butt off, and we'll see if anything happens with those. But I'm also writing a lot. I do have a short film that I just completed and the editing has just come back. So I will probably be posting that somewhere very soon, either on, it will be on my Facebook page, but also probably on YouTube, that I wrote and starred in. So that's coming out. And I have a couple others that I'm working on. So yeah, so that's what I'm working on. Yeah, I have a short film called The Riders that will be coming out in a few weeks. So.
Oh, that's awesome. And if I get this episode might come out in a couple weeks. So if it comes out in time, I'll have the link in the show.
Oh, yay,
there.
Cool. Yeah.
Awesome. Oh, well, it was such a pleasure. I'm pleased as punch to have met you and learned about you.
Thank you.
And to know that you wouldn't need a dolphin, so I can. And if we ever get stranded. And no, it was a great time, Liz.
No dolphin eating. Yes, I will leave the dolphin eating to you. I'll just sing about it.
Oh,
I'll just stand behind you and be like, Steph is eating a dolphin and I'm crying on the inside.
Oh man. Oh well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Stefan. This was really, really fun. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. You're welcome back anytime. So if you've got anything else to promote, give me a call, an email, whatever, and we'll make it happen. So
thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Awesome. Likewise. Have a great night.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I don't know why I'm addressing you so formally, but ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. You guys have been so good, and I really appreciate you. Big air hug. Sorry for making that noise, but that was the episode. Liz Priestley, amazing. Go follow her. Show her some support. Watch Concrete Cowboys once it's out on Netflix. Keep an eye out for that. And then what about me, little old me? Thank you guys so much for listening to the show and supporting me. If you guys want to support me further, leave a review, subscribe, follow me on Instagram at A Comedy Advice Podcast. It's all in the show notes. So go on over there. It's the scripture of ACAP. Love you guys. Mwah, mwah, mwah.